Okay, here we are, hour number three, back with Harry. And we're talking about things that he just got back from a couple of weeks ago. Fascinating. All right. We're looking at picture number 14. If you go to Guests at Rents and click on Photos, you can join us on the tour right now. We are at picture number 14. All right.
Heck of a picture, isn't it?
Yeah, it looks a little like Mae West, but a redhead.
Yeah, well, maybe a wig, who knows. Now, this is the big painting at the entrance to the, well, in German it's called a Marina Kameradschaft. And in English we would say the Navy League Club or something like that for Navy veterans.
Mm-hmm.
And so on the Saturday from about 10 o'clock in the morning, we have fellowship there. There's a lot more pictures on my website, sharkhunters.com. And you only go there by invitation. And, of course, we are invited. As a matter of fact, they made me an honorary member of their Kameradschaft, and they gave me their little lapel pin, which is the official emblem. And there's a few speeches, but mostly it's just people meeting people and having frankfurters and not brats, but frankfurters and beer. And so we're there for 3, 4, 5 hours. And like I say, you'll see all those photos on the website.
Okay. Next.
On to number 15. This is in the evening on that Saturday.
Uh-huh.
And this is kind of an overview of one of the, from about the center of the room. This is a fellowship evening. These older guys, they're all veterans. Almost all of them are from the 5th SS, but there are veterans of other groups there, too.
Huh.
And, again, we are like welcome like family there.
Uh-huh.
And you'll notice all the glasses with beer.
Yeah.
And it's bad beer in that area, too.
It's Germany. What beer?
Huh?
It's not good beer?
No, I said it's impossible to get a bad beer.
Oh, okay. I see a lot of white hair.
Yeah, there's a lot of white hair. A lot of white hair. But sadly, every year there's less and less.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody wants to travel with us and meet these great veterans, time is not your friend.
I understand. Yeah.
Number 16. That is a good friend of mine, Paul Roche. That old fart is 97 years old there. Can
Amazing.
You believe it?
No.
Yeah. That's 97. He was a tank commander with the 5th SS when they were in Ukraine fighting against...
was he in the big Kharkov battle, do you think?
I don't know about that one, but he was in the battle at Uspienka, where the 5th SS, which is one division, was confronted by 8 Soviet divisions.
Jeez.
And ultimately pushed back by sheer weight of number.
Mm-hmm.
And I was over to visit him a few years ago. I think he was about 94 at the time in that town, Klagenfurt, in wintertime. I had some business over there. So he and I were going around the town square. They had the Weihnachtsfest, the Christmas festival, where all the vendors had tents and stuff up.
Oh, yeah.
And the snow, and it was just, it looked like it fell right out of a Christmas card.
Oh, yeah.
And we're walking off wherever we were going, and he was about 95 at the time, I think. I had to run to keep up with him, and I'm in pretty good shape.
Wow.
I had to run to keep up with him when he was walking. And then all of a sudden we hear, "Oh, Paul, Paulie!" And there's two old ladies. "Oh, yeah, Harry, come on. We take these ladies for a drink." So we went into a little shop and we're having hot chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Isn't this wonderful, Harry? We're here with these two beautiful young ladies." And I'm thinking, young ladies, this woman's like my grandmother, for God's sake. Let's get out of here. But old Paul, he was still chasing girls.
Now, he would have had Knight's Cross, right?
I don't think he was decorated with the Knight's Cross. He would have said it if he was. But used to be they could wear their Knight's Crosses in Austria before the European Union. Once it got European Union came in, all that stuff was forbidden.
Crazy.
Yeah. Oh, God, if you look at a swastika, your brain might melt.
Yeah, well, see people on the ground all the time over there, don't you?
Yeah, you melted.
Think about it, you just melt.
Yeah. So that was a Saturday evening. And like I say, there's a lot more photos on the on the website, including my friend Richard, the guy you said would look like a giant.
Mm-hmm.
And he is. I'm 5'10", and I don't even come up to his chin.
Wow.
But there's more photos of him there. And a lot of the younger guys, well, younger, I mean, he's like 40-ish, I guess. But a lot of them are there, and they're all like Schwarzenegger. They're all huge guys, and they're kind of the Praetorian Guard for these old veterans because this loony outfit called Antifa usually protests against them, and sometimes they get violent. So can you imagine? You've seen pictures of Richard. Can you imagine a wall of about 10 or 12 of these guys?
That's a nice thing to imagine. Thank
you.
Yeah,
and nobody's going to come through that thing.
No.
So, this time we had no problem with Antifa. We had no heavy police protection, just minor, because Antifa was off helping all the border jumpers come into the various countries.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Then they found out there were some homosexuals among them, and boy, they were trying to help the homosexuals, and the rest of the refugees didn't want nothing to do with the homosexuals, so now Antifa's forces were divided between the homosexuals and the heterosexuals, and, you know, they were just all confused, poor fellows. they must not like me. I have not been featured on their homepage for quite some time.
Yeah, sorry,
Harry. Sorry. Darn. Okay, so the next day, Sunday, that is the big day for the memorial ceremony at Ulrichsberg, Ulrich Mountain, in which they remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform, no matter what flag, Americans, Soviets, French, Italians, as well as Germans and Austrians. So this is congregating outside, as you know, before the shindig gets started.
That's pictures 17 and 18.
Yeah, correct. And everybody's just milling about. I don't know if you can see, just over the shoulder of the white-haired guy on crutches in the center. You see a little past him?
Yeah.
There's a guy with an unusual hat. He and his friends come all the way from Syria every year for this celebration.
Christians.
Yeah. Amazing, isn't it?
I see one anyway.
Yeah. Well, he's the leader of the group.
I'm fascinating.
And the guy in the left corner who seems to be looking around the edge of the picture.
Yeah.
That's Engelbert. He used to be the president of the group that organizes this memorial, but he's kind of stepped down and new guy's taken over. Photo 18, that's the band, Oompa Band, for furnishing music. And they also play the Austrian anthem, and then Carinthia, that county there, they've got their anthem. And then they also play the German version of Taps, which is beautiful. It's Ich hatte einen Kameraden. I had a comrade. It's beautiful music. So they're all tuned up and they're playing. They don't get any beer because they got to work.
Very nice. Yeah. Okay. And number 19, we've got a bunch of different flags.
Right. They're getting all their flags ready for the procession out in the parking lot, and they all mean different regions and various different things. And if they've got a little, what they call a wimple or a streamer on the flag, that means they've gotten additional honors.
Mm-hmm.
And in 20, you see the marchers getting ready to carry the flags in. And the banners on these guys mean something also. Over on the far right side, white, red, gold, those guys are usually the ushers.
With some old fellas in there, I can see them.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them. These old guys, I met one guy, he spoke a little English, but his daughter could speak good English, and he wants to tell me his history. He was 5th SS. Man's 93 years old. He's in very good shape.
Nice.
God bless him. They just stay in good shape.
Yeah.
Number 21. Now, you got to tear your eyes off the beautiful blonde.
She's only half blonde.
Well, okay. I guess.
And she has a cigarette, strike two.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the cigarette, you know, Germany and Austria are starting to back off, but they're from Italy. Her husband there, who's folding up his banner or unfolding it, he's the mayor of Reda Puglia, which is right across the border into Italy, and he is very strong to keep the old traditions up. And it was there in his town, Reda Puglia, where one of the bloodiest battles of World War I was fought between the Austrians and the Italians, and the slit trenches are still there, and they're maintained as a memorial, and the bunkers are still there. They've got museums there, and they also have the largest war memorial in all of Europe.
Wow.
It is a stairway, 300-and-something stairs, and it's like about 70, 80 yards wide, and they've etched the names of all the fallen Italian soldiers on these stairs.
I see.
Excuse me. The ones they knew. There were a lot of unknowns, of course, and when
now
we
this,
go...
Number 22.
Okay, 22. Now we're going to switch gears for a second. After this, we went back to... Berchtesgaden, we stayed there. There's a lot more photos, like I say, on the website. We saw the grave of Dietrich Eckart. He was member number one in the party. People think Hitler founded the party. He did not. He was number seven. Dietrich Eckart was there. And there's so much more history we saw there also.
What are we looking? What is this building we're looking at?
Well, this is
a mausoleum?
Well, this is afterwards. This is after the tour broke up.
Yeah.
I then went down to visit one of my agents in Austria.
Okay.
And this is a modern edifice on the front of a formerly unknown bunker.
Hmm.
In some of these bunkers over there, which I'm going to be going back to visit, they're 8, 9, 10 stories down into the ground. And one of them is where they had a test bed for the V-2 rocket engines.
Hmm.
They also had another bunker where they produced something called Zerum 525, X-E-R-U-M, Zerum 525. And this was used, they only had one use, and that was with Die Glocke.
That's right.
The so-called Nazi bell. Yeah. And that they produced them in these various bunkers. I was not able to go in there this time.
So this is in Austria?
Yep.
Okay, so this is the front new edifice that leads to a bunker system in the mountain or the hill behind it.
Yep. World War II construction.
Is this going to go into service as a tourist thing? Is that it?
We are trying to talk to the people who have control. You know me, if it was just up to me, I'd just walk in the door, and if somebody came over and challenged me, I'd just talk in my best down yonder hillbilly. Well, I don't know what all I'm doing here. Isn't this the way to the county fair? So we'll be looking to add that. And then especially number 23, excuse me, this is a little valley that most people don't know about, and this thing here is called Kreuzstein, In other words, the stone or the cross in the stone. Mm-hmm. This whole area had been an SS Aronauer area, and it was also what else was it? It was an Aronauer area, and it was also a secure area for the Waffen-SS, mostly for the first SS. There were hotels, guest houses, pensions.
Well, now there's only water.
Yeah, well, all around the edge.
Oh, okay.
Is the village, but I took a shot of this.
I see.
Like I say, there's more, way more, in the on the website, and some of the other stuff we learned on the website also. And I'm not going to say which one of my agents I met with or where, because that gets a little.
Understand?
Too, yeah,
not, don't want to know.
When I was in Bavaria, one of my people there let me know that the engineering officer on a submarine that we both knew met with Otto Wermuth in 1992. Wermuth was the skipper of U-530 that surrendered in Mar del Plata in July of 45, 2.5 months after the war ended. They had been, U-530 had been on a combat patrol against the United States. He was off New York, and they got the surrender order. So rather than turn himself in to the Allies, they had a meeting and decided they would try to head for Chile, because one of the guys had relatives in Chile. They did not open sealed orders as that. Bite my tongue. This guy Gerard Williams put in his book that he opened sealed orders, and no, there was no sealed orders. I knew Wermuth, and some of our people talked to Wermuth. There was no sealed orders. Mm-hmm. There was no secret mission. Mm-hmm. They just decided to make a break for it. And although they did have some interesting stuff on board, which we talk about in our books, Hitler in Argentina, and also Hitler and the Secret Alliance. Tell about what's on there and more photos.
Right.
But this meeting was in 1992, so they were reminiscing over the old days. Also, I was informed that Heinz Schäfer, the skipper of U-977, had a long meeting with Gross Admiral Karl Dönitz before his departure, and one day before that, he met with some high-ranking officers from the Waffen-SS. Now, what does a submarine commander need to talk to the SS about?
Interesting questions. Yeah.
Yep. Well, we have some of the answers, but that's going to the membership.
Wow.
You know, Schäfer was the last submarine to surrender, and that was in August of 45, 3 months after the war ended.
Where did he, and this is in Mar del Plata?
Yes, correct.
Uh-huh.
And the interesting thing, that was a Type 7. Now, Wermuth had a Type 9. They had fuel capacity to go that far. But the Type 7 had a range of only 6,500 miles. And according to Schaefer's own logbook, they left Norway on a combat patrol against England, and they only had three quarters of a fuel load. They were off England. The war ended. They went back to Norway, dropped off the married men, and without taking on any additional fuel, went all the way down to Mar del Plata, which is several hundred miles south of Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like...
Well, they had to have a refuel somewhere.
They had to have something somewhere, that's for sure. And in our book, Hitler and the Secret Alliance, I think it is. Mm-hmm. It's one of those books. It was pretty well indicated that the reason they offloaded those men was not because they were trying to be nice to the married men, but because they needed the room in the boat, because it was stuffed full of all sorts of things to the point where the chief engineer was concerned about the stability of the boat.
Hmm.
And that's in the book, too. Now, you remember last time I was on your show with Clark McClellan?
Sure.
We were talking about Hans Kammler.
Well, we made a three-part video out of that program.
Yes, I know. We got that on the website, too.
Good.
You do good work. I was talking to one of my people there who's very, very knowledgeable, incredibly knowledgeable. And we talked about the escape of Hans Kammler. And two SS officers were interviewed after the war ended. And they both said, now they were interviewed independently, not mm-hmm. by each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they both said that they walked into the woods with Kammler. Because they didn't want Kammler to be able to spill his secrets to the Allies. Sorry. But one SS officer said that he shot Kammler in the back and killed him. The other SS officer said that Kammler shot himself in the head. Well, it's a little tough making that kind of a mistake,
I would say.
And they never found the remains.
Uh-huh. That's because he was Cape Canaveral.
That is exactly right. And how he paid for his freedom, mm-hmm. we found out that he brought over, where's my notes here? He brought over enough processed uranium that the Allies could make five nuclear bombs out of it. So that's how he bought his way to freedom there.
Got it. Well, they ended up running our space program, folks, as we've talked about.
Oh, yeah, they sure
and
did.
Look at the videos, Clark McClellan and Harry Cooper and yours truly. There are three parts of them in the YouTube video. And prepare to be amazed. All right, we'll be back with Harry. And when we come back, there is some footage in, I think, video number two of what looks like DeGlocka chained to the hinge?
You're calling it the hinge. I thought it was called the mouse trap, but
whatever.
Lots of people have different names.
At any rate, it looks to me very much like this footage could be real of this thing actually in operation. I mean, it is wild. All right, stand by. We will continue. Okay, and we're back and talking about all kinds of things. Picture number 24, Maestro. What do we have?
Okay, well, you're getting ahead of our secret stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. You got more secret stuff? Let's hear it.
Yeah, we got more secret stuff, but no photos with it. One of our agents learned some time ago that the CIA and the U.S. decided it was better to have Martin Bormann found in Berlin and not found by the Mossad in Paraguay. And so we've got quite a bit of file on that, including the fact that there was red clay in the skull of Martin Bormann. They did find his body in Berlin in, 1970-something, I think it was, or uh-huh. whenever it was. And but, you know, they were digging for repairs to the train station. And the guy who was digging was pointed over to another area by his boss. No, dig here. And then, oh, look, here's bones. It must be Martin Bormann. And they found out, yep, it was Martin Bormann, but there's traces of red clay in the skull that's native to Paraguay. Also, Where's the blood flag? You know, anybody who knows anything about the history of the Reich knows about the blood flag. Mm-hmm. On 5 May 1945, there were 95 Messerschmitt ME-262 jet fighters on the airdrome at Munich, but only one had fuel. A pilot came up there who had the blood flag, and he took the plane as far as Innsbruck and landed there. And when the Americans overran Innsbruck, they found the plane, but the pilot and the flag were gone. We think we know where the flag is, but that's definitely not for publication now.
Wow. Okay, there were 95 262s.
Yep.
Was that the entire force of 262s that the Germans had?
No. They had a lot of them. They just didn't have pilots or fuel.
My goodness.
Yeah, that was, you know, where they had gotten decimated. They didn't, the same with the Japanese. Their pilots didn't get replaced, so they were flying rookies, and they were just targets. Mm-hmm. Also,
that must have been an incredible thing to come across as whoever overran the field, the airdrome. 95 of these things lined up.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, 94 of them, because one guy flew out.
Mm-hmm.
Then, at the end of the war, this engineering officer friend of ours found about 50 of the search heads, the guidance units of the newest Zalkernig torpedo.
Uh-huh.
It was the most sophisticated torpedo guidance system there was, and they were just thrown into a lake. In 1947, this friend of ours pulled them out of the lake and sold them to Spain and Argentina for their navy.
Wow.
Then, and a lot of this is going to be followed up to our members in the monthly magazine, and mm-hmm. if your listeners would like a copy of the electronic magazine, no charge, just send me an email, sharkhunters@earthlink.net. Tell me they want a copy, and we will send it. Now, one of my super agents, in 1988, he personally read a file from CIC, dated 1948, and this file stated that it is not good if Adolf Hitler would return to Europe during the Cold War, because there were thousands of SS men ready to rise up again and follow him. 1948 document that said it's not good for Hitler to return to Europe.
Wow.
Well, if the guy's dead in April of 45, why are they worried about
it? Tell me about this document again. Who wrote it? Where did it come from?
The CIC.
CIC being, for our listeners, again.
Army Criminal Investigative Center or something like that.
Okay, so that's American.
Yeah, right. And this was dated 1948, 3 years after the war ended.
So this speaks clearly to the fact that the Führer is still alive, and it's judged not good for him to return to Europe.
Right, during the Cold War.
How fascinating.
Yeah, werewolf possibility. You know, there were rumors about the werewolves, the guys who were ready to march again. And so they figured, because there were thousands of SS men who had pledged their loyalty to Hitler, not to Germany.
Right.
They were ready to go again. Let's see.
That's just an amazing little tidbit.
Yeah, and the Junkers 390, you know, the big 6-engine airplane that could fly forever. This one was painted in Swedish Air Force blue, and it flew from the airdrome at Schweidnitz to Norway, and then from there to Uruguay.
Mm-hmm.
They had 5 crew. 7 guests, 3 of them were guards. The pilot was a Hauptmann, which is captain, 38 years old, spoke German, Spanish, and English, and also had 2 tons of gold aboard. to help with Uncle Addie's day-to-day living expenses.
Fascinating.
Yeah, then there's more, but...
Well, that's just a remarkable little sample of reality of World War II.
Yeah, there's no way, no question that Hitler and Eva Braun did not commit suicide in the bunker.
No, none.
And they went out.
Well, they were planning, apparently there was talk about a resurrection of Germany in 46, 47.
Yeah.
They felt that there was a means to do it, to maybe start up some kind of a few battalions, I don't know, a division.
Could be. The Allies were always afraid that it was going to pop up again.
Well, that's why they killed 5 to 8 million Germans after the war ended up until 1953. 45 to 53, they killed all the people that were super patriots and who might be involved in some kind of an effort like that.
Yeah.
That was part of it.
Well, Eisenhower was not such a nice guy.
Eisenhower should have been put to sleep. Sorry.
He was not such a nice guy with his...
No, he was a genocidal butcher, a maniac, anything but a hero in the war, anything.
But just that was kind of the plan, wasn't it, though, for Germany to be destroyed?
Of course, absolutely. All right, stand by, Harry. We've got to take a break. We'll come right back.
Then we can go to the pictures, you betcha.
All right. Okay, and here we are, and let's get right back to the last few pictures we have with Harry.
Okay. After I got done bouncing around Germany and Austria...
Now, let me say one thing. Harry came back with a lot of intelligence, a lot of very interesting material, historically accurate, that we will hopefully see in the not-too-distant future. Sounds like enough for another book, almost.
All I need to do is get another 10 hours per day. It's almost midnight here, and I've been in my office since 3 this morning. So got to find a way to get 10 more hours a day.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we have a new researcher, member, friend named Aldo Villagrossi, who lives in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to see him, I'm on a very limited budget, so he found a nice pension, which is going to be 23 euros a day, which I can afford. And we got there. I got there. He picked me up, and we drove up in front of this really, really excellent four-star hotel. I said, well, what the heck? Is this a pensione? He says, no. The mayor decided that you're our guest of honor, and so we're putting you up in the best hotel in town.
God, class.
Yeah, and he said the community is paying for it. I couldn't put my hand in my pocket for anything. If I wanted a beer, bang, there it was. If I wanted dinner, lunch, whatever, bang, there it was.
That's really nice to hear.
Super nice people.
Yeah.
And Photo 24 is the mayor of that town called Troncino. Uh-huh. What a nice guy. He broke his day to give us a guided tour of the city hall, including the 13th century tower and everything. And later in the evening when we were driving through the town, there was the mayor walking home. I said, what the heck? The mayor walks home? I said, you know, I'm used to Chicago where they run him around in a bulletproof limousine.
Yeah.
So, no, he was just every bit the gentleman. And the photo 25, that's the seal of the city that the mayor gave me, and right behind that is a book, a very nice, very heavy book, about the history of the area. Of course, it's in Italian, but the pictures are all in English. And he signed the book to me, dedicated it. I'm looking at it here on my desk right now. Those people were so friendly, so really nice. And Aldo here is an expert in another section of history. Now, we all know that after Evita Peron died, her veins were filled with glycerin, which was a way they treat the bodies of important people to make them look like they're still alive. And she was there in a memorial room in Buenos Aires. I've been in that room. But then when Peron fell from power, her body disappeared. Well, later investigation showed that it was moved to Italy for safekeeping and buried in a cemetery in a suburb of Italy under the name Maria Magi or something like that. And then after X number of years, it was brought back to Buenos Aires and put into the crypt at Recoleta Cemetery, which we visit every time we go to Buenos Aires. Well, in photo 26, you're seeing what's left of the headstone that was on that grave.
I'll be darned.
And that is the grave. And the headstone with her name on it, Maria Magi or whatever, was knocked off. And
I see it was broken clean off.
And this is an old cemetery, but it was abandoned in 1960 and overgrown and just recently been cleaned up. And Aldo is doing as much research on Evita as I do on Hitler, etc.
That's fascinating.
Yeah,
so her parents came from that town. She was originally from that town?
I don't know the history. Aldo is the guy that knows the history. And in photo 27, that's him in the orange jacket with some of his research team. And 28, you see that cemetery. It is one spooky-looking cemetery.
Yeah, it is.
And it was drizzly and gray when I was there. Boy, enough to scare the hell out of you.
That is looks like a Hollywood set.
Yeah, it do. They'd save a lot of money just using this cemetery instead of building one that looks like it.
Did you catch a cold on the airplane?
Yeah, do I sound like it?
Just occasionally.
Yeah, not only caught a cold, but also, you know, not a lot of sleep. I've been putting in like 14 hours.
Well, I have something for you. It's called Breathe Safe, and we're going to get you one. You wear it around your neck, and it puts out a low volume of ozone and ions right up in toward your nose, your face, and you breathe it, and it will kill anything you have, any bacteria, any viruses. It's coming out. It's just here, and I'll advise you more about it. It's called Breathe Safe.
Okay, good.
A little battery-operated thing, and you put it on you when you on the plane, whatever. You will not get sick.
Oh, that's good, because I see some of the people wearing surgical masks on the airplane.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. You get a Breathe Safe, and you'll have it made.
So. Yeah, they probably don't sound like me right now, I guess.
You sound fine. You're just coughing a little bit, and I know you, and I can tell. You got something.
So anyhow, picture 29, we found an area where you had to climb up on a ladder and look over a wall, and all these little mini caskets are in there, and it makes you wonder, because an awful lot of the graves there were children that died around 1947 or so, you know, right after the war. Everything was pretty destitute, and a lot of them starved to death. But why are these little caskets all thrown into this jumbled mess? Well, Aldo's trying to find that out, too.
How weird.
Yeah, the whole thing is weird. And now, of course, you're going to think I'm crazy here.
I don't know.
But Aldo believes that Evita never was taken out of that grave and moved back to Recoleta Cemetery. He believes she's still there.
They can find that out.
How?
Ground imaging.
They did ground imaging, and they found one of those small boxes about 1 meter under the surface.
So, cremated?
Either that or all the bones just jumbled in together. But now he's faced with one hell of a problem. Where's the tombstone? Where's the name?
Mm-hmm.
And the cemetery being abandoned in 1960, they can't mm-hmm. find a roster of the graves.
Somebody must have known that it was her and whacked that off and took it. A treasure hunter?
I'm sure that's the case. But how do you go to a judge to get an order to exhume a body to test it for DNA if you can't prove that that's her body? There are no next of kin because the records have all disappeared. And even if you got an order to dig her up, who are you going to check the DNA against?
Well, you have to check it against what's buried in Argentina.
If there is anything in that grave.
If there is.
But according to others I've talked to, Evita had a daughter from a previous friend.
Mm-hmm.
She was a very friendly young lady.
Understand, yeah.
Some of our people are in contact with this lady, and Aldo is also in contact with her. So they can run DNA match there if they can get a judge to sign an exhumation order. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't just go around. One of his buddies there wanted to go get a shovel and start digging. And Aldo told him, no, that you can't just dig up a grave.
Is it under the tombstone that we saw, the big block?
No, that's a headstone, not a tombstone.
So it would be from there on down.
Yeah, in front of the headstone, and uh-huh, they said it's uh-huh. about 1 meter down.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, physically, it's not hard. Legally.
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, you can't just go digging up people's graves, even if you're absolutely certain. You got to get a court order,
yeah.
Even in Italy, I guess.
Huh.
And if you want to hear more about this, I can put you in contact with Aldo if you want.
Well, it's an interesting story.
Yeah.
I think he does need to go and get a judge to side with him, just to find out for sure.
Yeah, and it's going to be tough proving to a judge.
Mm-hmm.
And otherwise, if he or his buddies come back at 2 o'clock in the morning to dig up a grave, holy cow, you know.
Yeah. Mayor arrested. It wouldn't look very good.
Yeah, right. Well, Aldo's not the mayor. The mayor's his buddy, but still,
mm-hmm.
you know, you wind up looking like a bunch of ghouls. And that pretty well negates any scientific
I would say findings. Historian, but you can say ghoul if you want to.
Not me. I'm not going there.
Yeah.
No, I'm a historian, and I get caught where it says I'm gang verboten, but I sure as hell wouldn't be digging up a graveyard.
No, I can't imagine that.
I can find enough ways to get into trouble over there.
Yeah.
At least this time, I found out from my spooks over there, I did not have Austrian secret police following me every place I went. When I was there in March,
mm-hmm.
as you know, they were tailgating me, and it was a man and a woman. They even had breakfast at the table next to me every morning. I think they would have at least offered to pay for my meal.
Wow. All right, my friend, that's a wonderful tour. Really appreciate it. Go get some sleep, and we'll talk about the next trip, I guess, next time you're on.
Yeah, sounds like a plan, and I'm going to go have a big meal right now. I'm going to have cupcakes and milk. Drives my doctor nuts.
Good man.
Yeah.
You enjoy. Have fun, Harry.
Thank you.
Thanks, mate. All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Harry Cooper, sharkhunters.com, and there's the latest patrol for you. All right, that was a lot of fun. Okay, we will be right back.